You're listening to the Repath and Podcast, sponsored by Patchworks, hosted by me, James Gunn, and Paul Rogers. We bring you interviews with industry thought leaders, C-suites of tech companies, leading retail brands, and our aim is to help you make better decisions for your business and discover new ways of doing things and new technology. But we also return to tell other people about the podcast, share our posts on social media, and if you're new to the show, give us a rating wherever you're listening. So thanks. Let me set up our latest episode. So, cracking topic today, page speed and performance conundrum, balancing customer experience with speed gain. So this was inspired by an article from our guest Liam, who'll introduce himself in a minute, on LinkedIn, in which he featured not only his own thought leadership and expertise on this, but notable luminaries from our industry, such as Yota, Render Better, and our previous podcast guest and respected consultant, Erwin Hoffman, who are all specialists in different areas of site optimization and performance. And the key maxim is this, right? The less you put on the site, the faster it is. But in e-commerce, we're not just trying to make pages fast. We also want good brand experience, good customer experience. And actually, those latter two are sometimes more important than actually pure speed itself. And also, the key maxim here today is that measured speed, in terms of what we can look at in metrics and tools, is different to perceived speed of a user. And we've got to balance that and not just obsess about speed. However, brands also need to be aware that crap performing pages impact customer experience, provide bad brand experience as well. And we've got to make sure we balance the technical with that brand bit. And I know Paul and Liam will talk more about it. There's loads of data out there. You know, Deloitte reports showed that the travel brand TUI saw a 31% decrease in bounce rates, 78% reduction in load times through better tech optimization. eBay measured a 0.1 second improvement in load time, resulting in a 0.5 increase in add to cart. Pick your stat out there. There's lots of them to show that this actually makes sense. So with that as our setup, and Liam, do you want to give people an introduction to you, people who've not come across you before?
Yeah, perfect. So thanks for having me on as well. So yeah, I'm Liam. I'm technical director at Vivant. So I've worked alongside Paul for 4 years. Previously, I ran the digital side of Shopify Plus agency, and then further back, yeah, just development essentially for a few different agencies. So yeah, my background's like computer science development, that sort of technical solution side.
Excellent. So let's get into this, and we're going to, for those listening, we are going to be balancing the technical piece and also with that balancing with the customer experience piece. So it's not just going to be purely on metrics, don't worry. But let's start with the commercial bit. What commercial impact does good performance have? Why, for those who aren't so experiencing this part of it, why do e-commerce teams need to take this seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just touched on some of it as well. Like, there's tons of data out there that are studies between the conversion rate increase with the improvement of page speed metrics. And I think, yeah, I would take the exact measurements with a pinch of salt. But essentially, there is the correlation between those, and we've seen the correlation. So I think from a commercial point of view, especially sort of, you know, higher volume or something, it makes perfect sense to try and at least to a certain degree have the page be to a good point. I think like it, yeah, the worse it is, the more impactful it is. There's like a threshold. But yeah, from a conversion rate point of view, it makes perfect sense. And I think you mentioned like Yota. So I looked just prior to this. So you mentioned like Yota, one of those tools that maybe we'll come on to through this. But the way that they track, so they track monetary value against the improvements that they've made in page speed by only optimizing. So their optimizations will be rolled out for like 90% of users. So they can measure the 10% of users against the 90% and see, put a monetary value on the conversion rate between them. So yeah, you can measure that. Like, there is an impact on like a commercial impact between the two. So yeah, I mean, that's generally the reason behind it all. And then we were talking, Paul, beforehand on, I guess, commercial impact for brands. So we work with a lot of premium and luxury fashion brands where actually the value is in the reflection of the brand, I guess.
We're going to come on to that one, Liam. You're jumping ahead.
Okay. Yeah, commercial-wise.
So one question I had, interesting sub question, or I think it's interesting. So back in the day, like maybe 5 years ago, there were so many studies around the impact of performance on revenue, and there was an incremental positive or negative impact as a result of seconds in load time. Back in the day, the average performance was much worse, and I think almost every platform, and definitely the SaaS platforms, have a much better starting point. So I guess one thing that I was going to ask you is, what's your view on, like, do you think you need the same level? Because we've always talked to clients about discipline from like a content perspective, from a release perspective, from a testing perspective. But like, do you think it's as important nowadays as it was years ago when the starting point, even in Shopify world, was pretty terrible?
Yeah, I think it's definitely got, it's gone the right way. And I think when you're talking about the difference between a second, between bad performance and good performance, is, the margin's a lot smaller than 5 years ago or whatever. I think the more and more we're using like heavier assets. So like page weight is still going up. The amount of assets we're putting on a page, the amount of video that's like being streamed or loaded on a page, all that sort of thing keeps that going up. And I think the only thing to add to that is like from our point of view, it's improved. So like now we're all on 5G, we're all on like super fast Wi-Fi. But a lot of the brands that like we're working with are serving in other territories in the world where actually the internet connection is not that strong, and they're still potentially having poorer page loads. But yeah, overall, I definitely agree that the level of importance maybe dropped a bit.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think it is. There's been a lot of, obviously, all of the platforms have really doubled down on it. I think like the average like front end toolkit has improved a lot. Next question. So you were about to talk about this, and this is a bit that I find really interesting. So I think I usually, and James, I'm sure you've got the same experience. So when you work with different agencies and even different developers, you tend to get different levels of obsession and prioritization around performance. So we've definitely worked with some agencies in the past that were so focused on performance, it was every time you bring up a third party, it was like a massive debate to try and get it implemented, even if that third party offered significant value somewhere else. And I think you end up in some kind of balance. But when it comes to like the overall kind of experience, and I guess like, you talk about like video and, really high res imagery, and then even the third party of everything else, like where's the, like, what do you think on kind of where the balance is?
Yeah, I think I'm probably further down that scale than you in terms of like, I would historically be on that side of like, adding all these tools are going to, increase different things, and like, let's not just drop widgets in all over the place. Let's do like API integrations for different things. And I still think to a degree that's the right approach. But yeah, because of what we previously said, I think just the significance of it has probably reduced. But and then I think really it's context of what the who the merchant is, what the priorities of the merchant are, and just being pragmatic about it all. I don't think there's like a one size fits all, and that for any brand, let's make sure the performance is this extreme. But this whole conversation is going to be about the sort of compromise and balancing act between that still being significant, but also, especially in the e-com world, like the brand and experience side, balances
that. So that takes me on to a sub point. I personally think like more of a priority. Again, we work with quite premium brands that kind of build this like brand experience and introduce like, branded content, and they invest a lot of money on art direction and everything else. I personally think the rendering part is as important, if not more important, than load times. And I think then like the perceived performance and you know, everything feeling very consistent and premium. So like you look at like an On Running, I would put them in like a really high bracket for this kind of stuff. How do people like achieve that, and what's your view on it?
Yeah, I mean, and we'll probably get more into, you know, different, without getting too dry, more into different metrics and things, but like a lot of metrics or measurements for page load will be like the full end-to-end, so from the initial point of a page starting to load till when it's like technically fully complete, where from a user point of view, actually the last 50% of that you don't see, you don't notice, it's just behind the scenes things are still loading. So a lot of the importance is like prioritizing assets being loaded onto a page, the order of things loading, and then again we'll get into like Google Core Web Vitals and things, but some of the metrics that they bring in are more focused on the user's interaction or the user's like perceived experience on the site. So like CLS, where you essentially don't want to, it's like pushing for things not to be shifted around on page load. So yeah, prioritizing the order of those assets being loaded.
Patchworks, the world's most modern integration platform. We can connect any key e-commerce system from storefronts to marketplaces and ERPs to fulfillment solutions. This allows retailers and partners alike to simplify their tech stack integration and do away with point-to-point vendor-specific apps. We can automate and streamline the flow of data across your entire e-commerce business. Find out more at wearepatchworks.com.
I think this the point you were making about obsessively focused on page speed and not thinking about that compromise bit is so important, because I've got a business I work with where they have a development team that's built a platform off an open source, and they have a we won't use external plugins, not 100% rigid, but very much we want to build because we can control it better. But actually a good example is wanting to use like a AI search tool, but build out a search capability from scratch versus using a market leader, which there are times when using a third party, the capability it delivers and the scale and speed at which that capability is going to increase over time means building it yourself is bonkers. The cost and effort and maintenance, and therefore you have to have that little trade-off. So I think it's really important that people think about what the end goal is. Speed needs to be factored in to then you work with that third party and the integration, like you're saying, APIs, avoid doing lots of JavaScript grid stuff if you can. But yeah, it's interesting to see those dilemmas. But let's move on to SEO. So there are several SEO studies that have shown a small correlation between rank and page speed. So not massively like, okay, get your page speed sorted, your rank's going to fly up, because we know that it's far more complicated in terms of how search engines like Google rank. But I saw a study from Google and Deloitte stating every 1.1 seconds your page speed improved can increase conversion rates by 8%. I've never seen that personally. Now, I caveat, I don't work across all different types of sizes, all different scales. So I'd love to know from the businesses you work with, work you've done, what impact have you seen between SEO and conversion from a speed point of view? Have you seen it? Have you seen it have impact?
Yeah, so from my side, I think those two, I've probably got two opinions on those two parts. So on the conversion rate increase, like I've definitely seen and still see the correlation in that effect. So I think even before this, I mean, 0.1 seconds to improve conversion rates by 8% is, yeah, pretty extreme. But I've definitely seen, say like Yotta or whatever, when I've checked, is like for like, so users that are optimizing against users that are not, it was sort of like 10 to 15% conversion rate increase on the one that I've just glanced at. And we see that commonly, like, yeah, when you're measuring those sorts of things. I think SEO, Paul, you might have like, your background's probably more SEO focused than mine, but from the SEO point of view, I think like Google's strategy from years ago was always to bring that in as like a major ranking factor, and then it felt like there was a point where actually so many sites were failing their Core Web Vitals that it never properly became a ranking factor, and more of like a sort of warning or threat that at some point this will impact you. And I've never, from an SEO point of view, I've never seen like a huge like noticeable impact, like correlation between page speed and actual organic rankings. The one I've seen is like, yeah, I guess failing co-ed vitals, it's more of like you're penalized potentially in your rankings rather than getting rewarded for having good page speed. But yeah, Paul, I don't know if you've seen anything more concrete, but
I do think this did have a very negative opinion on, sorry, negative impact on development. So this whole thing is one, two major impacts. One, every SEO consultant will send really generic performance recommendation and documentation to developers when it's like no way relevant to the tech stack, and like everyone's got this like crazy opinion around performance. And two, every time rankings drop or, you know, visibility drops or organic traffic drops, SEOs will, a lot of the time, will blame performance, and it's like this blanket kind of almost like excuse, which is very annoying. We've monitored a lot of our clients' performance. So we've got like a random tool, which is very similar to one that we used to pay for. I forgot what it's called, but basically just take the Core Web Vitals metrics by day per client. And I've personally, since we've been doing that, and since we had the other tool, I forgot what it's called, I've never seen like a noticeable impact. I've never really seen anyone prove the impact of like improvement or reduction in performance to organic visibility. I've never seen like a close correlation.
I think the SEO one's harder to measure as well than conversion rate. You can set up some tests, but with SEO, like, there's so many variables. Just give somebody an out to say it's just slow. But I actually think as a ranking factor, it's pretty small. I've not seen major correlation either way.
The only good the only good thing I think Core Web Vital did make a lot of more, they basically made best practices a lot more prominent and important. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that nudged a lot of the platforms as well, because they don't want friction with clients as a result of like their base theming and everything failing Core Web Vitals, and then development teams the same. So I do think it's helped a lot. Go on, Jeds.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think they're a really solid set of principles, but they're not absolutes, because you can actually have an effective page that might not hit green on all of those Core Web Vitals metrics, which we'll talk about in a minute. I've seen sites actually from an overall speed, like that instant rendering, the critical path rendering is really good, but maybe they've got a few issues in terms of like largest content page, for example, which is obviously not ideal and you can do stuff, but it's not like the site has failed just because that's not under the 2.5 second threshold. So I think you need to use them as guidelines rather than absolutes. I wanted to ask that question because there are a lot of incredibly smart SEOs and technical SEOs out there that we all know who do brilliant work on helping businesses make better decisions architecturally and who understand that balance and nuance. But I'm still yet to hear that definitive, it's really fundamentally easy to measure, because you're right, Lim, there are so many different factors that can influence rank. Isolating it to speed is very difficult. How are you control that? I've yet seen methodology where maybe there is one, I just haven't read enough about it. So there you go, challenge to technical SEOs. Maybe there's stuff we need to know about that we're not aware of. Let's tackle the elephant in the room. I love this one because we know the industry has been banging on about headless, composable, in many respects for sensible reasons for the last few years. But I've seen enough information where people say, I've heard people being told, as in clients being told, you need to go headless to get a fast website, which is just not true. And you still be slow on headless if you don't get the right setup or you use the wrong third parties or et cetera, et cetera. But let's look at the positives. What role do you think headless can play in boosting performance? What have you seen?
Yeah, I think so as well, just to go back and plug the blog that you sort of referenced at the beginning, that all came out of basically the fact of you can achieve, or like 99% of brands can achieve, a really strong performance on Shopify with a sort of theme build natively with the right work put into it. So that was sort of the premise of the blog. really, because this question comes up quite a lot. And then from a headless point of view, my answer is sort of always the same. That is, so I'm like a fan of headless in the right circumstances. I think there's a lot of benefits. I don't think the reason to go headless is ever purely just to get a faster sight speed. I think it, you know, it has to be for the other concrete reasons, and that's, you know, that's a factor or that's a benefit of it, but it's not the core reason to go headless. It's sort of an easy way out to say, you know, we can't achieve a good experience, so we'll do this massive change of tack to build headless. And that, still, as you said, there's no guarantee. So I think, yeah, my answer is that a headless opens more opportunity to get a better page speed potentially than a liquid feed, but definitely doesn't guarantee anything. And actually, I've seen, or like we've probably all seen, headless builds that end up being slower than what could probably have been achieved on a liquid feed. I've definitely seen headless builds that have ended up a lot faster than could be achieved as well, just to balance that out. But yeah, there's definitely no guarantees. Like, still needs to be done right. Still need people who know what they're doing from the performance side.
So next question, we've kind of touched on this already, but in terms of e-com development teams and then also people managing content and kind of, you know, trading the site and whatever else, like beyond content and, you know, selecting the wrong third parties or third parties not building their widgets and, you know, Java and writing the JavaScript well in an optimized way, like where else do people go wrong with performance?
I think commonly, so especially when it's noticeably slow, so I just to go back to content as well, I think that it is probably 50% of a, you know, an audit, and the sort of first steps will be reviewing that, like imagery, videos, using the right file types, having imagery at the right dimensions and things, rather than, you know, 3,000 by 3,000 raw photography images. Having a process, like the merchant having a process in place to actually get those assets, you know, right, optimized for web, and keeping to that process. So I think that is probably 50% of like the first steps. And then, yeah, after that, it tends to be like, so lazy loading of assets and that side, for the rendering, the use of the overuse of JavaScript, or bringing in, you know, JavaScript frameworks, or inheriting JavaScript libraries that end up bloating the code massively. Like all of those things are sort of the main contributions, I'd say. Like, there's, it's probably nothing groundbreaking. It's like they are the big factors still that impact these things. And then like to a smaller level, so like you can get, and I've seen examples where it's like innocent developer mistakes at some point through the liquid, like can lead to like massively underperforming sites. So in a Shopify theme, just like looping badly through a set of products and things like that, where actually it can go from a front end point of view, it goes under the radar because it all looks like it's perfect, but actually behind the scenes it's just like inefficient coding or inefficient use of loops and doing the wrong things can lead to like drastically longer page loads. So sort of just ensuring those things are not happening.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so one other thing that I know we've commented on in the past is kind of like loading particularly third-party JavaScript, but also just, you know, scripts in general in the wrong order. So you'll get, you know, critical parts of the page loading later on in the journey. So actually like building the full page experience and loading all of the content takes longer than it needs to. And then anything else could feasibly load afterwards. Like, what's your view on that?
Yeah, I think that, and this one goes back to like the perceived performance part. So the, you know, the full end-to-end page load is still the same, but from a dev point of view, using like lazy loading, then you can defer or like async the right JavaScript and basically making sure those files and assets are loaded in a certain order where from the user point of view it feels faster. The, you know, the critical path of the load and the critical parts of the page that the user are going to see first are loaded first, so it feels instantaneous. I think actually, like, aside from that list of the sort of bigger things of optimizing and lazy loading and things, that makes a bigger difference from a user point of view. So like metrics wise you probably won't see as differences, but from a user experience point of view, that's probably the bit that has like biggest impact, putting some consideration and time into the order of loading these things.
That makes sense. And I guess which and I guess I should know this, but I actually don't, but in totality of reviewing performance and impacts and ongoing benchmarking, but aside from the tool that I mentioned earlier, like what tools do you use to assess this and the different areas and impacts?
Yeah, you should know this, Paul. It's bad from you. So I always start with Search Console, basically. So from Search Console, you'll see like the full list of index pages and the state of the whole site, really, rather than just running the homepage and a product page through any of these tools. It's like the full state of performance across the site, and start to see like how many of the pages are, you know, from a Core Web Vitals point of view, passing, filling, like the hygiene across the site. And then, I mean, there's a massive amount of tools that have a big amount of crossover between them, so it does come to like personal preference some of the times. But like Webpage Dev, Team Metrics, Google Lighthouse are all options that do the same sort of thing, which is like lab testing, homepage, product page, PLP, and getting the metrics from those. And then, yeah, I think there's other tools I mentioned in that blog again that are like real user metrics. So from that point of view, I think if everything's indexed in Search Console well, like her metrics are like reasonable, it's dropping to like real user metrics and trying to improve like what your users are actually experiencing. So yeah, as a range of tools, that's probably the order of running through things.
If you're just a related question, so if somebody's starting out and they've not got a deep level expertise and they don't want to spend loads of money with somebody else paying them to do this, what's the number one thing they should do? Because I've always loved saying to people that webpagetest.org's great for just some indicative stuff. Going into, yeah, if you look in your Search Console, Google, and then go to Google's PageSpeed Insights. Are there any others that are like a low cost free that someone can self-serve on without having to be really technical?
Well, I think those, as a, in that context you've just said, like, I want to get to a point where everything's at least like healthy. Like, I know that there's nothing major going on. Those, I think, are a good starting point. So Search Console, making sure everything's passing with like Web Page Test and Lighthouse. I think what I also, what we like, we do with our clients is tracking those. So like, we'll set something up that tracks those metrics daily. And just sits behind the scenes, and we get the sort of a daily insight on those metrics. So the reason for that is not to look at it daily and actually point as soon as there's a drop or anything. It's more like, just to glamorize it slightly, it's more like a sort of stock market view where this is the level we're at, and the actual metric or the actual value day to day doesn't really matter. It's like the trend over the week, over the month. Am I trending in the right direction or trending downwards? There's, yeah, always going to be fluctuation. There's always going to be like a spike because Cloudflare has gone down, or a spike because, yeah, you know, I've got high traffic that day. And it's not about like pointing at that one thing and sort of panicking about it. It's just getting that like measured view, be able to see what, you know, what trends you're going in. So I think that, yeah, there for a, yeah, I think that would be the starting point for me.
Yeah, I like the fact that you're doing those reports, because I would advise that too. And also, yeah, the not the knee-jerk reaction, because you can you could have a chart which trends the speed, the average session speed, and then you could have conversion rate. And your conversion rate could suddenly go up or down, and then panic because it might, you might see the speed change, but then you realize that somebody's just put a 30% off promotion code on, yeah, and that's why your conversion rate just spiked, or as you say, something else has happened that's dropped it.
I think there's no value, and I've had it like historically as a developer where a merchant or whoever will be firstly running page through all of these tools, and if one of them gives a red, they're all going to be slightly different. If one of them gives a red, like, send that across because it's not superb on them all, and then doing that every day, and then suddenly there is a bit of a fluctuation. It's like, yeah, it needs to be more of a sort of longer term trending view.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really good advice. If you suddenly see it drop down and stay down and that is persistent, then you know something's fundamentally shifted rather than a short-term tactical promotional site issue. Yeah. Let's talk about fonts, an area that I've looked into, but I'm not going to profess expertise in, and the do's and don'ts, because there are certain like maxims out there about, okay, you need to preload fonts, use web-friendly fonts, and actually there's a far wider range of fonts that can be used, but fonts can in impact on the core web vitals, like cumulative layout shift, because if you have a fallback font whilst your brand unloads, you can suddenly get that flicker and adjustment. So what from your point of view, do you, when you're advising clients, like what's good look like for font management, and what can it do if you get it wrong?
I think fonts is one that's like, and historically as well, has always gone under the radar. Is actually some of the bits we've talked about, it's one of the more impactful things sometimes if done badly. I guess nobody really realizes it. But firstly, even in font, and this comes back to the brand side, because even selection of font and where that font's hosted. So, you know, if you're using a third party, or like Typekit used to be the one that's a huge page load addition to get the one specific font that you're using. So actually how the fonts are hosted, if it's web hosted or if you've got the font files locally loading on the site, is the ideal. And then even things like, so by default you might be loaded, if a font can come in, like font family might have 12 different weights and styles that all get loaded by default, and it actually does make a big impact where just loading the specific fonts that you're using across the style sheet is the best thing to do. And then, like the font swap is just one small CSS point that can help fight that bit that you've just talked about, which is one font loading then flicking to another one. Mix of basically going through all these steps. But fonts is one to look at.
Thanks. And my final question for today is around prefetch and pre-render, because this has been used massively in things like, content sites, travel, etc. There's certain industries where they've really doubled down on using these. From a pure e-commerce point of view, and looking at the sort of brands you work with, how extensively is prefetch and pre-render being used? And is it a critical thing that e-commerce teams should be having discussions about, or is this it's useful to look at once you've got the basics and the fundamentals sorted?
Yeah, I think probably that. So I think we've covered a lots of other little bits, and things like defer and async are the sort of stepping stone towards, say, like pre-rendering. I think that almost gets to the point where, you know, when we're talking about headless, it's more custom and sort of a bigger amount of effort. It's more going away from like the native behavior of the Shopify theme, which I think is probably what between me and Paul we tend to advise. It's like we want to be best in class and get all the best practices of a lot of this page load stuff in, but without moving away from sort of native Shopify functionality and behavior, and more towards, like, that goes a step towards headless or, you know, JavaScript frameworks being used rather than Liquid, where actually it's potentially overcomplicating and moving away from what Shopify is sort of handling well. And the point that we've talked about internally actually is, obviously, and this is going off topic a bit, but Shopify is sort of moving I think, towards like no code, low code setup, sort of trying to get more areas consistent. So like checkout extensions and also that sort of things, like to get everybody on a consistent code base. And actually things like pre-rendering, when Shopify have more consistency across all the stores, it's probably that sort of thing that they'll bring in and handle natively as well. So yeah, my advice typically would be to sort of stick towards the more native Shopify way of doing things in that context. Don't know what you think, Paul.
Yeah, I think we have a similar view, and I think that stuff will get more important over time. And I think Liam said for a long time that the move towards sections was move towards low code, and I feel like the next step for the smaller brands will be more no code. And then at that point it'll be managed at platform level or application level. So it'd be interesting to see where that ends up. I think that could be an episode in itself, to be fair. Last question. Which metrics do you think internal teams should be looking at and why?
Yeah, I mean, the ones that and you could pick out from a range of metrics, I would stick to Google's Core Web Vitals. Like, they've got massive teams of people that have picked those metrics because it's like a broad range of perceived performance. It sort of covers a bit of everything in the grand scheme of page loads. So I think really the Core Web Vitals, especially from like a merchant's point of view of not being super experienced, but I want to make sure it's at a good point. I think tracking those plus like time to first byte or time to interactive are probably the two that I think are most like noticeable from a user and beneficial to improve. So they would be my... Yeah, to try and shortlist it, I would stick around those metrics.
Cool. I've really enjoyed this episode. I really like the art, and I recommend anyone go and have a look at. We'll put a link on the podcast landing page. Have a read through, because it's not just Liam's perspective and knowledge and expertise in it, but you've got other people in there as well who are experts in this field sharing their insights and what they see working. So lots of value in looking at it. And do reach out if you want to probe further and get more technical. Liam loves that. Definitely loves getting into technical weeds. Yeah, so definitely. Do reach out and ask him questions. And thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it. Keep an ear open for our next episode. We drop one every week. And don't forget to give us that rating if you haven't already. Cheers, everyone. Until next time.
For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gird, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.